Welcome to Manifestation Lizified, your weekly dose of inspiration. This podcast is rooted in the belief that a positive mindset can improve every aspect of your life, from work to relationships to your overall well-being. By changing the way you interact with the world and approaching it from a positive place, you will manifest a fulfilled life of your creation.
Hello, everyone. I am really excited to be back for another episode of Manifestation Lizified. So today we have Rebecca Haas joining us. She helps ambitious, creative people self-compassionately reduce overwhelm so they have more energy to focus on the work that matters most, plus the space to really enjoy life. So I'm really excited to have Rebecca here. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining me. Do you want to tell the listeners just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. And I am a creative wellness coach who you described. I help creative people who maybe have struggled with burnout, maybe are just feeling overwhelmed, who have gotten this message from society that they need to be working all the time and are balancing lots of different things, and help them have a foundation of wellness that will allow them to balance their life better. Basically. And I'm also a pianist and composer. So I come to the creative side of it from that angle.
I love that. And honestly, it's so true. Before we dive into the questions, you know, I do this podcast for fun and I really enjoy it. But at the same time, I also do illustrations, digital art. I'm learning how to really do that, comics, et cetera. And it's something that I'm really passionate about. But I did find that when I was in a 9-to-5, and I still am, you know, it became harder and harder to carve out that time for ourselves, to carve out that time to just kind of create, because there's something to be said about just having the ability to create and you're using a different side of your brain. So I think it's really important. And I agree with that. And actually, that brings me to one of my first questions. You know, I think 2020 has really been a rough year for many. And I wanted to ask you, you know, how can people tap their creative side to cultivate that balance and to try to avoid burnout? You know, I know that you consider creativity a little bit of a form of self-care. And I feel that way too when I'm drawing. It's like I'm able to use a different side of my brain. So even after work, I'm still able to do it because it's like I'm using a different part of the brain and whatnot. So I'm curious. So how can people really tap their creative side to cultivate balance and avoid burnout?
Yeah. So I think creativity has a different role in everybody's life. I'm working with people mainly who either do creative work as their full-time job, or they might do it as a side hustle, or they might have this interesting balance of, say, they're a music teacher and that's how they make their money, but they have as much time as they want to play their instrument to create themselves. So even though, like, on the surface, it seems like they're doing their creative work, there's all these different components of it, and maybe the stuff that they want to be doing isn't coming to the forefront. And then there are people who maybe don't even identify as creative, but enjoy doing creative things. I think everybody is creative, and we all have different ways that we do that in our lives and that it manifests for us. So I think it's really different based on the person. I have been focusing a lot through the lens of just what feels good right now. Because like you said, 2020 is a rough year. Like, maybe some people are having a good year in some ways, but like collectively we're going through it right now. So I think wherever we can find places to make ourselves feel good, I think that is a worthy goal in and of itself, like regardless of what seems productive or, you know, what other external value you might assign to it. So I think it's so helpful to just go for like what feels like a fun thing to do for creativity right now. Maybe that is baking a cake. Maybe that is grabbing a post-it note and doodling something. Maybe that is knitting, which you haven't done in a while, or like it can take on so many different forms. And I also think that creativity for a lot of people can be something they're doing more of in ways they might not realize. Like if you have to pivot what your job is during COVID, or, you know, just all these different ways that we're adjusting, that takes creativity. And we're not like, well, that's fun creativity. You know, we don't think of it that way, but we are using creativity probably more this year than we would have been otherwise. So I think looking first at what feels good, if you're at a loss, maybe think about like what did 7-year-old me really like to do, or like whatever age in your childhood? Because sometimes we forget that we used to really like doing certain things and that we just kind of stopped doing them at some point because, I don't know, we got serious about something else or whatever reason, but it's easy to feel like you don't have the time anymore for that creativity. So my other lens that I look at it through is, how small can you make the creativity in order to fit it into your life? Like, you might think, I really don't have time for this, but maybe you can do like 10 minutes of something or like a mini version of something, and it might be really fun and satisfying. And you might realize, like, I'm really having fun with this, and you might just kind of keep going if you have the evening ahead of you. But even if you don't, that 10 minutes could also have a huge impact on your mental health and just your outlook on life.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And honestly, something you said really hit home for me. You know, what did I used to love to do when I was a child? I feel like those moments of nostalgia coupled with the act of being creative makes a world of difference. You know, as you mentioned, as we get older, we're not really setting aside that time anymore. Our time starts to get filled with other things, our job, our family, you know, our friends, etc. But in actuality, it's just so important to kind of get back to the roots of it. And I rediscovered drawing and illustrating years later because I missed it. It was something that I used to do every single day. I'd be sitting there, you know, in a classroom and a teacher would be talking and I would be drawing. That's how I listened, actually. In fact, I listened better because I was able to draw and keep my hands busy. And I say drawing helped me do fairly well in school because of that. But do you think a lot of people lose that? Do you think they have a hard time going back to that?
I think it's really personal, but yeah, I do think a lot of people do, because there's kind of this idea that we need to be good at something in order to pursue it. And I think that idea spills over into our hobbies too, a lot of times. And of course, like, everyone's like, have a side hustle and like, where can you make this thing into a productive thing? And it's like, maybe it doesn't have to be a productive thing. Maybe it can just be a fun thing.
I really love what you said in regards to suddenly into our hobbies, this idea that we have to be perfect, that we have to be great at it, really bleeds in. I know I struggled, and they say this about a lot of artists, right? You know, there's a certain level where your work is at, and then there's, you know, your taste is much higher, and you just need to get to a point where they actually connect and intermingle. So that, and I see that, you know, I see that across the board with friends, myself, with hobbies. You know, we want to be good at it, but oftentimes we're not. So I know that there's something that you talk about pretty often, and it's called compassionate productivity. And I think this segues into that a little bit. Do you mind elaborating on, you know, what compassionate productivity is and how we can implement it into our lives?
Yeah, absolutely. So I coined this term. I mean, I made it up, but I can't find it elsewhere. So I'm going to say I coined the term kind of in response to my own, like, pretty bad and unhealthy relationship with productivity. I have gone through burnout many times. Anxiety is something that comes with that, and just something that's been a part of my life too. And I went to music school, which gave me all these ideas. Being American, there's plenty of ideas that productivity is most important. Your work is attached to your worth, and like, that's why you're valuable. Like, what do you do? Not who are you? And then music school like helped solidify that, because there was all this like, how many hours did you practice? How little sleep did you get today? It's all this like bragging about how much you're doing and how little free time you have. And that just became ingrained that like, that's all a badge of honor. And then like, a Midwesterner who just from farmers. So there's like this work ethic that was drilled into me. So like, all these factors really made me feel like productivity was important. And I think that's a common story for a lot of Americans or culture. I'm generalizing, but I think so. And so I went through some pretty severe burnout and anxiety 3 years ago. And that really just made me rethink everything. And I knew I couldn't keep working constantly. Before that, I was teaching 30 piano students. I was gigging. I was blogging. I was doing all these things. And I would feel guilty if I took like too long of a lunch break, because it's like, no, this is time I should be doing something else. And it was like anything that didn't have a productive purpose wasn't okay. Like just having fun for fun's sake didn't feel okay to me. And once I recovered from that anxiety, I say recovered because it was pretty severe during that time. It's obvious that you continue to maintain, but I had to change my life. I had to working less. I had to be more intentional about making sure I had healthy habits that were going to support me. And so I don't want to join the message of productivity being this constant and toxic thing. And so my definition of compassionate productivity is working in whatever way feels the best and most effective for you personally and you at this moment in time. Because if you're a morning person, you might be able to work in a certain way in the morning that you can't do at nighttime because you're tired. Because our energy isn't constant. That's part of the activity, the toxic productivity myth too. It's just like, keep going, keep going, keep going. You have to pretend you're a machine, but you're not. You're a human and we have energy cycles and those are real and natural. So both working in whatever way feels the most effective for you, but also having built-in ways to replenish your energy as much as possible. And so that's going to change too over the course of a day, over the course of a week, et cetera. So you're going to be, it's a dynamic thing that you're going to be reacting to. But hopefully this way of working is more sustainable in the long run because you're building in those ways of feeling good, like I was talking about with creativity. Because really when you're feeling good, I mean, this sounds simplistic, but like if you're feeling good while you're working, you're going to do better work. And you're going to get more done. And that's not the way that we look at it most of the time. And it's not productivity for the sake of productivity. Like that, I want to help dismantle that idea. So ideally, you're prioritizing and you're getting the important things done. And you're doing things with the intent of fulfilling a purpose that is personally meaningful to you.
I like
and you have
that.
A body. And you're taking care of your body. It's not all about your mind.
No, it's true. And I'm with you. And you know what you were kind of bringing up just now about scheduling in that time reminds me a little bit of time blocking. I don't know if that's something that you implement or that's something that you recommend to your clients. But actually, right before we got on this call, I put my to-do list together for tomorrow. I feel so productive that I managed to do that from a work perspective. And then from there, I decided to start blocking my calendar. And you know, that's the thing. You start writing things out on a to-do list, but until you actually put it into your calendar and really think about how long is this going to take me, I realized, whoa, I can't, like I was getting a little too ambitious. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to do these really big projects all in the morning. So I realized I started scheduling in breaks. I was like, all right, Liz, here's a reminder. Take 30 minutes, step away from the computer, do a stretch, meditate. Another one was like 30 minutes, take some lunch, you know, do what you need to do. Because tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that feeds a little bit into that more compassionate productivity because you're scheduling in that time for yourself. You are kind of allowing yourself to hopefully recharge a little bit so you come back to the table with a little bit more energy. And I did try to schedule a lot towards like early in the day because that's how I work. Like after 3 o'clock or so, I'm not very good at working on very intensive documents. And so usually I try to leave my administrative tasks for later in the day because I'm that person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're so right. Like time blocking is really important. I feel like I could talk about time blocking for like way longer than the length of this podcast. Actually, my experiments with time blocking earlier this year were what got me into this. I used to do time blocking during that like anxiety period that I was telling you about, but it didn't have any buffers in it. It was just like this, now this, now this, now this, and like a little bit of time for lunch and then go on to the next thing. So it was like I was cramming in all the things, but I wasn't paying attention to my energy in between there. So during COVID or like the earlier days of COVID time, I felt like I needed more structure in my schedule. And I was like, I'm going to experiment with time blocking again, but I can't do it that way because that doesn't work. I need to think about the energy at different times of day. And I got kind of like scientific nerdy about it and experimented with scheduling breaks and not scheduling breaks, but taking them when I wanted to and sort of like observing what different things were happening at different times. And so I definitely do recommend it to my clients, but I recommend it in a more personalized way because some people hate it and they feel boxed in by it. So it's like, okay, maybe you just have a menu that you choose things from instead. Or some people are like, okay, sticking to this makes me make sure I take the breaks. Like you were, so I kind of have like different modified approaches of it. But if you know that analogy where someone comes up with like a, I don't know if it's like a vase, but like a glass container, and they pour a bunch of sand in it, and they pour a bunch of pebbles in it, and they pour a bunch of bigger rocks, and then they have these large rocks, and they're like, now how am I going to fit these in here? They do it the opposite way, that like the big rocks go in first, and then they do it the opposite way, and like there's room for the big rocks because you put the important stuff in first. That's kind of how I think about the breaks and the energy replenishing stuff is like, if you are just new to time blocking and you want to try it out, like just schedule your big rocks first. Like if your most important thing is taking a walk every day, just do that one thing. And then that's like baby steps toward time blocking or time and energy blocking together.
I like that. I think that's a great way of looking at it because I was struggling, right? I would have like, okay, try to remember to take a 15-minute break. And then the break would just keep going by and I'd keep working. And, you know, and you're right. Sometimes you have to like add bigger chunks of time where possible so that you kind of are like, okay, this one thing, I'm actually going to do it, right? I'm actually going to take a real lunch or whatever it might be. So yeah, I totally agree with that. So one of the last things that I really wanted to ask you was, what in your opinion does it mean to be a whole person? Because I know this is something that you've talked about, and I'm curious, especially from a creative standpoint, what does it mean to be a whole person? Are you someone that leverages both the creative aspects of yourself and other, and you believe that everyone can be creative? I just want to have an idea of what you mean by that.
Yeah. So this is the name of my podcast, so I think about it a lot. And I also ask everyone I interview on the podcast what their idea of it is, which is really cool to hear other people's ideas. So I keep saying this, but I think it's an personal thing. Like we all have to define it for ourselves. But my definition is feeling the most myself, the most truly myself possible, which means staying in touch with my intuition, my inner voice, that kind of like tuned in energy. And I think that really mirrors creative energy because intuition and the creative process are so linked to each other. And like, I want to say balance, but I hesitate to use the word balance because sometimes it makes it sound like balance is this static thing that you can just achieve, which like balance is always shifting. And even like being a whole person is not something you achieve. That's constantly shifting too. But I think that backing those intentions up with the replenishment of your physical body, of your spiritual life, your mind, your emotion, activity, all those different things, hopefully that will lead to that mental clarity that lets you continue to be intentional about everything. So that's what makes me feel like a whole person. I know lots of people have different definitions.
I really like that though. And something you mentioned sticks out to me is that it's a constant, right? Where balance isn't just achieved, right? It's something that we have to work towards every single day. And it's constantly shifting. We might have a little bit more balance in this area and that's okay. And I feel like sometimes people, you know, we say work-life balance, work-life blend, you know, et cetera. And we don't, It's become such a term that like people almost like, it's almost like it goes over people's heads because they're so desensitized to the term. Oh, work-life balance. Okay, sure. You know, is that really realistic? And to your point, I do. I think it's something that we just have to work towards every single day and slowly we'll achieve some kind of balance. All right, Rebecca. So, you know, one last thing. Is there anything else that you wanted to share with our listeners? Any key takeaway that they should have before we leave them?
Two things. Never worry about doing too little of something if it's something you're struggling to get started with, because even the small version will probably have more impact than you think it will. And just please be extra kind to yourself. It's been a really tough year. I think most of us could do with some extra self-compassion in normal times, and we especially need it now.
That is such a great message. I wholeheartedly agree. Let's be a little kinder to ourselves, especially at the end of this year. So thank you again for joining me. If my listeners want to learn a little bit more about you, where can they go?
You can go to coachingforcreativewellness.com to learn about my coaching services. And to learn about my music, you can go to RebeccaHaas.com.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. Have a really great rest of your day.
Thanks so much.
Thank you guys so very much for listening. So if you enjoyed the podcast, please feel free to leave me a review. You can also find a few more doses of inspiration over at my Instagram @manifestationlizified.